I think X is positioned to swallow up TikTok. I think some deal with Larry Big Bags Ellison, good friend of Elon's, is something's on the table here. Because if you don't remember, Oracle already has a data deal with TikTok. In the fall of 2020, it was Oracle, Walmart, and Microsoft, which had the option to buy TikTok for $30 billion. Oracle is already housing and interrogating the algorithms, but it's not enough. It's just not enough. I could see some Big Bags Ellison play here with Elon, and we got a TikTok ending up in X.
All right, welcome to another episode of Not Investment Advice. We got Trung Phan, Jack Butcher, Bilal Zaidi. Trung, what were you saying there just before we start recording?
Before you hit the record button, I was just saying, man, this podcast is so much more fun when it's a bull market.
Oh, man. And people, the old school listeners will know, but this podcast was born in, what was it, March or April 2021, right? So it was right in the middle of everything popping off the last time. I think actually maybe when we started, it wasn't fully into a bull market. I'm pretty sure. I don't know. Maybe we were
Jack
actually.
Jack had just gone into Bored Apes. And then he ran it for seven.
That's true, actually. That
Jack
was maybe episode
for,
two or three.
For listeners that are new or don't remember, this is not, I'm going to butcher this. Jack, you can cut me off at any point. Jack bought a Bored Ape in Q1 2021 and then went to the Bored Ape New York conference in the fall of that year. Like, this is the top.
Jack, I mean, Jack did it pretty well. You played it well.
No, correct.
Okay, so I'll give my thesis at the time was the idea that as soon as you take these things into the real world, the gap in the value just starts to become so massively apparent, right? That was what happened.
So what was the gap? Just say it. What's the gap? 99% dudes and 1% girls.
And what club do you pay $500,000 to become a part of? And it's just an economic conundrum to be able to deliver that degree of value, right?
You're not if being it critical isn't just of the a collectible, ecosystem. It's hard, right? It's hard.
If it isn't a collectible for a collectible's sake, right? As soon as you make that step, it brings in a whole new set of considerations. So that was my thesis, not investment advice now, wasn't investment advice at the time, but that's what happened.
Let me actually give Jack an analogy that I would love your thoughts on. I go to the car shows now because of my kid. He loves cars. So we go to like British custom cars, British classic cars, supercars. And like, I think this is kind of what you're saying. So these events are huge, right? You've probably been on a ton of car shows. And then, you know, famously the car show girls, if you know what I'm saying.
Jesus Christ, Jesus. Trump's face is ridiculous.
Man, car show girls.
I know what you're saying. It's like WWE the ring girl vibe.
No, but I mean, like, I'm saying that in a very respectful way. Like, take their job very seriously and like, it's a draw, right? But Jack, you've been to car shows.
Yeah.
And like, imagine you spend $300,000 on a McLaren and then once a year you got to park it in some park and then you get to show it off for passerbys. That also doesn't feel that great. Like,
yeah, you can drive but the McLaren you're driving every day, right?
You're right. Every single day you're turning heads. Okay, you rebut it.
And I'm not saying, like, I'm saying there was social value and all that. Like, it's just the
on Twitter, for example.
Right. Like, there are still assets in that category that have held their value or increased in value since that time. CryptoPunks, probably 10x what it was when we first started this podcast in USD value, because there is no chasm to cross in terms of what you think you're buying and what you're getting in return, right? It's a pure collectible history play versus access to the things that this company will keep producing, which is a very difficult thing to square in your mind. So yeah, that was how it played out.
So wait, so Bilal, can you actually tee up what the topics will be later before I ask Jack one question?
Yeah, let's go. So obviously we're going to do a quick mini recap of what's been going on with the markets, bull market. Obviously we hit a big Bitcoin all-time high, finally getting to 72K. That's 72K, I think, right? And so that's going to be probably only a few minutes of just a few highlights. Then we're going to talk about the TikTok ban, Trung's favorite topic. You know, if you guys remember the thumbnail, the Jack special thumbnail of the one or two times we actually did the YouTube face for Trung. So we'll talk about TikTok ban and some stuff in Hollywood going on. Maybe Dune, Oppenheimer, Oscars, a few things there. And then if we get time, we might answer a few questions from the Telegram group. We'll see how we are for time. But go for it, yeah.
All right. So thank you, Bilal, for teeing that up. Jack, so now that we're a bit on the topic here, talked about Bored Ape. And this, again, for the love of God, people, this is not investment advice. Like, stop DMing me and asking me if this is investment advice. This is not investment advice. Jack, is there any rhyme or reason to what's going on with these meme coins right now? Are you applying a lens for your analysis? You're not going to name any coins you're into, but when you've been looking, because you've snatched up a couple, we're being fully honest here, how have you're looking at this cycle? What are you considering?
Buying it on the open market is like seeing something on Twitter that has any kind of mimetic legs, like this dog with hat thing, has like, it's like 1 degree of silliness away from Doge and whatever it is,
Shiba Inu,
all of that. Yeah. So it's like thematically similar, but it has like, it's on this new network. There's like some.
Plus there's a hat, which is key.
Exactly, it's got a hat.
Yeah. And the word with. The hat stays on.
Like they're saying this on yeah. Bloomberg now, right? Because it's wild, like that. Yeah. And there are obviously things that are way sillier than that, that you can imagine sort of go over the threshold of silliness that a lot of people will stay away from them because of, right? Which naturally caps the upside.
You're talking about re-spelling people from the past in history, evil people from the past. There's lots of funny ones there.
Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah.
That was probably on the list I was about to mention.
So for people that don't know, yeah, don't demonetize us. I said the full word. I didn't say that first syllable of that word and then stop. I said the whole thing. And you guys know what I'm referring to. So Jack, on that point though, I want you to dissect, again, this is not investment advice, and a lot of the moves already have. Geo Bodin, which you did mention in passing last week. Funny enough, as soon as we published the episode, it went absolutely bananas because an individual on Twitter said he turned $250 into $500K. Just pure FOMO, right?
And then
the State of the Union with Joe Biden the next day. And like when you're talking about a meme, it, absolutely incredible. Like when... The name itself, Bodin,
is just hilarious, like in itself. Like the Geo Bodin, like it's.
And I saw one yesterday.
You see it, Jester, and you know it straight
you
away.
You guys sent it to me. Jester Trudeau.
That's another one. Again, none of these, like in my opinion, all of these may have already, they've already kind of peaked a lot.
But we're talking about what Jack had said. Like when you see that, you kind of get, like, you're like, ooh, this is a good. Like Geo Bodin, you're like, oh man, that's good. Everybody knows Joe Biden.
Here's a good mental model for it. You know the trends tab on Twitter? Some trends you see once and you'll never see again, right? And these ones that have any kind of staying power are trends that you know, 2 days later, you see it up again. 2 days after that, you see it up again. Yeah. Obviously, personalities that produce media blunders, stuff to talk about all the time, politicians are at the top of that list, right? Whereas like they're always part of culture, so it, you know, this is all retroactively analyzed, but it makes sense.
It's an election year too, as well, right?
So it's always just going to crash with stuff that's happening, and then some stuff is just silly and funny enough that enough people like kind of get it to the activation energy level that it gets on big exchange, or like people start marketing it on its behalf, right? So I think it is almost just the next layer out from social, where there's this ability for people to speculate on what's going to be funny, interesting, whatever in a week's time, a year's time, whatever. And they just, the time is just compressing so much now, where I think we were seeing it last time where like people were deploying these contracts 10 minutes after like now it's like literally in the replies of the tweet that the meme might be born from, the contract is launched. And that's because of the speed at which and the cost at which like new chains like Solana make it so easy to do that.
Blah, go ahead. I just wanted to, I know you had a thought. I just wanted to shoehorn this in. So to Jack's exact point, the digitification of finance, I mean, we've talked about this for years now, but we're a year since Silicon Valley Bank, right? like a year since the crash of the Silicon Valley Bank, a bunch of VCs in their dungeons, in their goon caves, just texting each other, being like, yo, I heard, goddamn, that's something in my throat. But SPV 1 year later. So that was my thought. Similar vibes. Blah.
Yeah, go no, ahead. Not much else to add. I think just to what Jack said, a couple of things stand out to me is one, the speed at which this is all happening. And it feels to me slightly different to last time round in terms of, like you said, the compressed nature of it. To me, like we just hit, like normally the leading indicator, like the lead domino is the price of Bitcoin, right? That's why we always talk about it. It just hit 72K, just hit the all-time high and slightly beat it. Whereas last time when all this craziness was happening, we had already gone past, I'm pretty sure, the previous all-time high, and it was on its way up to 69K. So we're kind of earlier, and I feel like this idea of the halvening coming in 35, 40 days or whatever it is, a lot of people already know that. There's already discussions on that on CNBC. You see Pomp going on, doing his stuff on there. Incredible scenes, you know. And like those guys already know the talking points. They're like, so the halvening is coming. What does this mean? It means there's less supply.
Anthony Pompliano.
There we go.
That's how they hit it. You know what's real when CNBC is bringing Anthony Pompliano back.
There we go.
Back.
With his best tie on. Incredible scenes. But yeah, so to me, that was one thing. The other thing was the meme stuff. The meme coin to me right now anyway, obviously things can change. Feels like it replaced the mania of NFTs last time around, and also on that was on Ethereum. This is definitely very much happening on Solana right now, based on what Jack said in terms of the cost. Like, you know, it's way cheaper to be transacting on Solana and quicker. I don't know about quicker.
No,
fully,
but you brought up a great question, and I would love this because also a little inside baseball. This is a great tagline for a YouTube video and our podcast, Jack. Can you tell us the difference between a meme coin and NFT functionally? I mean, what is the actual difference here?
Functionally?
No, both. Like, what's actually the difference here? Well, like, they seem to be quite similar mechanisms.
Yeah, it depends on what the token represents in either case. Like, the thing that happens with meme coins that I've seen is, like, people can organize around this thing quickly, you know, and obviously, there's no cap to the number of people that can own that, which as a network formation strategy is powerful. But at the same time, the NFTs that we're referring to or have been referring to for the last couple of years has this visual component, which serves as this, like, I align with this network, you know, like in the case of visualized value, at least what I hope happens is some of the things that I have produced signal, like, these are the things that I'm interested in. They're all downstream of the stuff that I was exploring for years with visualized value. And this being part of this collection, not even having to own it, it's actually like with a couple of the VV collections, because there's no restriction on who can save and use the images. You have some similarities there with the distribution on the meme coin side, but the image in the same way, like, music or fashion or these like vectors of culture bring people together. I think done right, NFTs can have that effect, you know, in the same way that all the kids queuing outside the Supreme store have something in common, the way they look at and think about and appreciate culture. And that's not to say you can't accomplish that with something that doesn't have images attached to it, but it's one less sense for you to use to build that.
Yeah. I think the reason I misinterpreted that, sorry, Bilal, was just, I just want to add this thought before Bilal jumps in, is like, because you do see the visuals, right? Like, you see Gio Bowden, like that picture is goofy as fuck. And like that, maybe that's why I'm like misinterpreting. There seems to be that visual element is like, I have Gio Bowden. Here's my whole
thing. In some cases, but like, for example, the one we were sharing in a group chat, which I don't know if we'll do a meme in a week on this, but the Choose Rich guy, what's his name again? NFT Nick.
Yeah.
Can you guys actually explain? Bilal, I'll explain what he's doing.
I don't even know. I've just seen him on the feed. He's doing his ridiculous videos and he's like, he's fighting.
Well, let's do the very
notes.
First one. He did the very first
with
image.
The champagne says, bowl.
No, this is who you're trading against. It was him and like three buddies on a yacht. Can you guys talk through this? I actually don't know.
I can tell, like, I know him. I went on his podcast in 2021, I think.
No way. Oh, yeah. Right. I didn't know that. Damn. That's
this guy has been like putting in reps in media in crypto and NFTs for years. They do a daily show every day. And I must have been in 2021. Actually, I went on when we were crypto jankies. Do you remember when we were talking about that?
Yeah.
Right around that, yeah. Then. So that was
like I'm still holding.
I probably have. I'm
21.
Yeah.
And anyway, he's just been around this ecosystem for a long time.
Was he funny back then too? Like, was he trying to be funny, or is this a newer persona?
He's definitely leaning into this because it's getting so much hype. But he's always been a funny dude. Like, he's always like,
I mean,
a little bit.
The community and all thing. Could you also mention as well?
Because
The one where he had the champagne bottle and he's like, this is a $700 bottle, whatever. And like community notes, this is $50 bottle.
Yeah.
And
incredible.
He's like, and now he's on Portnoy today. Like it's.
Like obviously it's all bait, right? And the fact that people interpret it as not is just like fuel in the fire. Like even watching that video and thinking that that person is serious is like, man, we are so out of whack with reality. Yeah. And it just the spiral gets funnier and funnier. But he co-founded, I believe, an NFT project on Solana, which has been running for probably 12 months or so now. And that's obviously concentrated effort. They have like very specific collection of these digital collectibles. They do a bunch of physical merch and everything. And then when this stuff took off, this is who you're trading against took off and he started leaning in and doing all the responses and getting the community notes, probably had like 500 million impressions on Twitter, this guy in, I don't know, a week.
He's definitely leaning into it, man. He's definitely leaning into it. Like people, So I got to respect that because I throw bait out all the time. I mean, like not as much as this bait, but I have to say, well, one addendum, the funniest joke about this is who you're trading against was my buddy, a dividend growth investor, underrated tweet. It didn't go viral at all, but he's like, he put a picture of Jim Simons from Renaissance Technologies, who's made $150 billion at a hedge fund and goes, this is who you're trading against. I'm like, that's good.
That's true. As well.
Anyways.
Good name, man. And his choose rich tagline, right? It's kind of become the new, you remember the wag me of 2021,
exactly.
Which is funny because it's like an evolution of that in a funny
wag
way.
Wag me was we're going to make it. Yeah.
We're all going to make it.
Remember. Yeah, we're all going to make it. Yeah, yeah, okay. And this
which
one is
in a zero sum, when a zero sum PVP market is the most ridiculous thing you could ever
to say,
right?
Yeah. We're not all going to make
you
it.
You at
yeah.
least are not going to make it.
Yeah. There's at least some people on a curve here. Maybe 80% might not, in fact. But yeah.
So hilarious, and also has the tagline, which, you know, is just absorbing all of this shit where, again, looking at stuff that has legs for whatever reason, whether you personally resonate with it or not, whether you find it even like your sense of humor aligns with it or you'd watch it without being part of the social spectacle, the repeatability of it and the fact that all of this joke is being carried by two words is incredible, right? And that has translated now to like these permissionless meme coin markets, which are going ballistic. And every time he gets community noted again, that's like fuel in the fire each time. Yeah. It's funny, Board, friend of the pod, tweeted this morning that marketing teams will now study the community notes thing, right? Because you're actually incentivized to get community noted. Something has to reach a certain level of exposure to even be challenged. So it's just like, it's hilarious how this has all played out, where it's like you're actually incentivized to bullshit.
People have to understand. No, you nailed it, Jack. I want to talk about community notes. I know that we're veering off, but I think this is great. I think our listeners love this stuff. The community notes, if you actually think about it, it's the perfect unit of comedy. Because all it is, it's fact-based dunking, right? It's like if you go to any Reddit feed that's funny, you provide the context. So let me put it this way. Eugene Wei, he has actually written the best stuff ever. You guys read his stuff about TikTok, right? He wrote 3 essays on TikTok, status as a service, used to work as Amazon, Hulu, and Meta. Legend. But his whole point about Twitter, he's got great insight about Twitter. He's like, Twitter strips away all the context. As in, you're either in the feed and you know what the joke is about or you don't, right? This is what kind of Jack was talking about, the meme coin. Which is why, well, people will post something and it'll just be the punchline. He basically, like, Twitter is all punchline because you're swimming in context all day, right? Like the Jim Simons thing that my buddy did, DGI, Dividend Growth, when he's like, this is who you're trading against. I actually thought I didn't really know about the NFT Nick thing. I'm like, oh, that's just a good tweet because that's funny. But then when I found out the NFT the Nick thing,
even funnier,
That was the setup. I had missed the setup and it made it a billion times funnier. But the whole point is that every tweet is basically just punchline. However, the beauty about QME Notes is it speeds everybody up on context instantly because you're getting the punchline, you're getting the setup and the punchline in one body, right? The top part is the setup. The punchline is community note. That's why it's a perfect unit of like Twitter communication. And people are like, bodied by community notes. You get the whole joke right there. How funny is that? Community notes just murdered this guy.
In this case, it's reverted though, right? It's like the...
No, because the setup is the initial tweet and the notes underneath.
No, but so, I'm saying it's so funny that people don't get the joke.
Oh, yeah, like, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
The community knows has come to this conclusion. It's like, this guy is clearly, like, it's like clearly amateur satire, you know?
Amateur satire.
No disrespect. Yeah, yeah. I'm just saying. You watch it and you're like, he's obviously pissing about. And like for you to like take your time to go and not be, no, this is a, I spent 30 minutes researching where's home cinema is. And so it's like, you're the clown. You are the clown in this situation.
You are Jester Turdo in this situation.
Exactly. And that's what makes it 10 times funnier each time. They keep coming back for it.
Sorry, could I just say one thing from the original point about Trung, you asked, what's the difference between NFTs and,
hit me.
And this? And so, Jack, I was obviously saying a very simplistic view here. I was not saying all NFTs are the exact same as this. Obviously, there's the visual element and there is, you know, you've obviously built some real projects. But what I meant by that, the correlation is more, in my opinion, and probably a lot of people's opinion, what was driving a lot of the NFT stuff originally was just, you know, chasing a bag, which is nothing wrong with that. People trying to flip their way into getting more ETH, getting more money, etc. And that was a primary driver a lot of the time. And I was saying this time, it's almost just a lot more simplistic. There's no like, oh, I need to know which trait is rare. And like, for some people, like a lot of people who did really well in NFTs understood that well, the same way they understand it in sneaker culture and they get the rare thing. And this time it's like, no, like I was messing around with it too. Last night I see this and I'm like, oh, that's hilarious. I see a few replies. I'm like, let me buy a lottery ticket tonight and wake up, see how it goes. And then you wake up and you're like, oh, okay, that worked or it didn't. And that's kind of very different to let me figure out which trait is rare and like all this sort of stuff, which is a lot more complicated and worked for some people. But in this case, there's just so much less friction, right? Like if you know how to use Phantom Wallet or whatever on Solana and you go to one of these things, you can buy it pretty much instantly. And there's kind of a transparent price and all that sort of stuff. So I do think that was the only correlation I meant is like that's the silliness of what we were all going through in 2021. And we're texting, you know, how many people were listening to this pod and texting us being like, oh my God, look at this funny picture and look at this. And now it's like, look at this funny video of this Choose Rich guy. And oh, by the way, there's a meme coin that's popping off for 24 hours and then it drops most of the time. So that was the only thing I meant to say. And I was just saying a lot of this seems to be happening way earlier than it did last time, just in comparison to all-time highs anyway. And so that's going to be interesting to see. Is this cycle just going to be way more compressed? Who knows? Like, it'd be a fool to try to figure all that out. But that is something that I'm thinking about as well. Yeah.
One other nod, there's a guy called Beanie. I think we've referenced him on the pod a couple of times before. It's like he had quite a succinct take on how to measure the maturity of any quote unquote meta, right? And it's like, basically when VCs are getting involved, you're smoked. That's the end, right? It's like, when
the Patagonia picture that's going viral now.
Oh, that's so good.
Like changing the, it's like when VCs are like doing rounds for meme coins and the launch of this is getting more sophisticated. And that's
when last time when you saw all the VCs who were not interested in this at all, changing their profile pictures to, you know, whatever random NFT project. And they're like, I'm in on the joke too. And oh, we're doing a whole podcast here. I'm not calling any people out specifically, but there were some prominent podcast
VC people. The most embarrassing shit I've ever seen in my life, man.
Incredible.
Listen, was I tempted? Well, first of all, I'm not a VC. I'm just an idiot. I'm just an idiot who's, actually, let me answer one question.
Bro, you've done a few investments, I'm pretty sure, right? You got that hat, you've worn that hat, but yeah.
Yeah,
but no, it's different enough, to, you got a 4-lap fund doing this. But yeah, so anything else on that, boys? I think we can rattle off a couple of the things, but we can get into the video. Topics.
Let's throw up that Drizzy video.
So while you're looking that up, I'll just say what happened is Drake posted a Michael Saylor, friend of the pod, clip from CNBC, I think, to his 150 million followers on Instagram.
Insane.
So another, such as champagne poppy on Instagram, 146 million followers. Let's see what this was. Call me Drake. Wait, was it the last one? Here we go.
Oh my, this is actually insane if you think about it. Okay, so Jack hit the pause. I'll just update the listeners. You got to play the audio. But so listeners, what Jack just pulled up here is Champagne Poppy, aka Drake, aka Canada's greatest export, just posted on Instagram stories a clip of Saylor on CNBC yesterday when it hit Bitcoin hit 72K. Man, this feels a little bit toppy, but also maybe not. But in this clip, not investment advice, by the way, I actually don't feel it's toppy right now. This is mainstream, buddy. And you know, Drizzy's got some Bitcoin bags, man.
Oh, yeah.
You know he's got some Bitcoin bags.
He's a stake partner, you know, stake.
Yeah.
The gambling
thing, right?
So he's definitely got some.
All right. So
yeah, definitely got
some. We'll hit this. Saylor has just, we talked about his unique selling propositions last week. Here's another one. This is a great one. Go ahead.
He was grinning, mate, on this.
Or do you think it ever becomes a quote-unquote currency?
It doesn't have to be a currency. Nobody's trying to buy a cup of coffee with a fraction of their building on Fifth Avenue, right?
Bro, do you know how good?
And he clipped that,
too. We talked about it last week. Yeah, he clipped it.
We need
to talk about dude, it's like a blade. We talked about last week, but I'm bringing it back up. Saylor's messaging is like those katanas you find in Japan that these masters passed down from thousands of years are doing that steel blade. You know, the one that gives you that tiny slice of wasabi or onion? Like, we've been listening to him talk about this. The Bitcoin is the piece of rock underneath Manhattan. That's what it is. You ain't buying a coffee with a chunk of that. Come on, people. Man, too good. Too good.
Very good. Yeah, but so that was something that happened in the last week. Obviously, we had the Trump. Trump was on, was it on CNBC as well?
And Trump was on CNBC. But one thing we left out of the Saylor thing, the reason he was on CNBC yesterday is he bought $800 million of Bitcoin.
Yeah. Who
on
did?
Monday morning. Saylor.
Saylor, yeah.
With that debt that he raised that we talked about last week.
The money machine, the infinite money machine.
Seeing a few more people write about what Trunk talked about last week with the S&P 500 thing, it feels very reasonable that could happen.
No investment advice.
Now they're twice the size of the minimum. Like, you know, the threshold to hit, they're like twice that size now, apparently.
People,
by the way,
I got to
give one plug to, I quote tweeted that Drake clip earlier. And somebody just replied, if you're reading this, it's too late. Incredible.
Wrong.
Very good.
Wrong.
That's very good. Very
wrong.
Good.
A lot of puns, man. Incredible.
One more tweet you guys sent me, which is amazing. Jack's been sending so many. It was the one where somebody's like, for the love of God, if you don't have one Bitcoin in 10 years, like it's so, get one Bitcoin. And that was so good, man. All right, people.
All right. You want to talk TikTok now? But yeah, anything else on that before we wrap up? We do have some questions in the Telegram questions part if we get to that around the same topics. But let's talk about TikTok ban and a forced sale. You're saying,
well, let me make
it might
it
be
clear.
The most likely thing happening right now.
It's not a ban. All right, this is what TikTok wants you to believe.
I'll just copy and paste what you wrote.
Yeah, okay. No, I'm just saying this is what the
You know, I don't read this news.
This is what the propagandists from TikTok and the CCP want you to believe.
There we go. There we go. Here's the Trung fan corner.
All right, guys. Listen, I got to tee up again. It's my TikTok rant. Been going on for years now. All right, this is nothing new. TikTok is owned by ByteDance, which has the Chinese Communist Party on its board seat. The major problem here, talked about it, going to bring it up again. You cannot have the main media influence channel in America, which has basically become, depending on what class, 170 million people in America use it. And they got the thumb on the scale if they want, right? Like TikTok they don't even have to be told by the CCP what to do. Like, they know that if they promote content around Tiananmen Square, for example, they're going to get into trouble, right? It's like, it's just like self-censorship, essentially.
Can I just give one? You know Palmer Lucky?
Yeah.
Anderil?
Yeah, he had a great video. If you want, you hit that video.
That's been the most compelling, like...
It's a trade dispute, right? You don't make it a cultural thing. China bans all social media platforms. They've done it for decades.
Jack, what did he say?
So he's basically being interviewed, and he said, the way I would position the argument against banning TikTok is very simple trade. Like, we cannot sell what they're selling into the States, into China.
It's trade reciprocity. Yeah.
And if that's the, you know, you have some leverage in what you can control and message and manipulate if you're able to sell into one market, but if there's no way for that trade to go both ways, then it can't balance itself out. I think that's a really compelling way to frame it that doesn't get into the like
culture war stuff,
brainwashing culture war. Yeah. Which, regardless of how true that is, it just feels like a smarter, more pragmatic way to go about it.
Well, to your point, why is that important though? Why does China ban other social networks? Because they know how important information warfare is, right? They understand that.
They don't want anybody choosing rich, Trump. They banned, yeah, exactly. They've banned like Facebook and stuff there, right?
Facebook, Google, Twitter, yeah. LinkedIn is banned, for the love of God.
They've got their own versions of
thank God.
All this stuff. So let me frame that. Actually, I'd add on to Jack's thing and say there's three layers to this conversation. When you're talking about banning TikTok, there's a whole culture war thing part, which is, like Jack said, that's a bad trade, because it just brings in too many emotions. The trade part is most straightforward. It's like, listen, trade reciprocity. It's like, it's so simple. Anybody can understand that, right? It's like, you're not letting us do this. This is how, fine, you know what? Let us bring our social networks in. We know you'll never do it, so we're just gonna reciprocate. The other angle that also happens is spying on US citizens and like data safety, but the reality is that every social network has data problems. You can literally go right now on any data broker and the Silk Road or the equivalent now and buy people's data. For how many times have you guys had your credit cards hacked or like your credit rating, and then you get paid out like $30 for their settlement, right? It's the biggest joke ever. Data's not like data. You don't need, TikTok doesn't have to mine your data. Like, it's a propaganda play and it's a trade play. Those are the two easiest. So I think what's happened though is this bill kind of came out of nowhere in the past 2 weeks. Trump tried to ban TikTok in fall of 2020. And for everything that Jack said, for that reason, it didn't really go through. It was an executive order, which can be reversed by the next president. It doesn't have the power of the legislative process. And Trump was obviously very anti-China at the time, but funny enough, he did basically a 180, which I'll get to. But so this bill comes out. It's unanimous, bipartisan, 50-0. They should be bringing it to the floor to vote sometime this week. I think it's Wednesday or Thursday, but kind of came out of nowhere. Unanimous. It came from the House of Energy and Commerce. It's a pretty powerful commerce committee. And the thrust of it was, they're like, we identified four countries, China, North Korea, Iran, and Russia. And any kind of media platform, social media essentially, that has an audience in America, if one of these foreign companies owns 80% or more of the company, we reserve the right to force a sale of that company to get their ownership to under 20%, 20% or under. All right. So it's a forced sale. In the event that they don't agree to the forced sale within 6 months, I think it's 150 days maybe, the App Store, we're going to request that the App Stores, in this case, Apple and Google, ban it. So that's the messaging, right? It's actually a forced sale. It's not a ban. But then TikTok, just to kind of prove its point, just totally fumbles the bag on this. TikTok's, did you guys see it actually? Did you guys open up TikTok and I asked you if you could call your representative? You guys didn't see that?
I think I did actually. It was a few days ago though, right?
Okay, last week or something. So their response to this was A, that they lied about the bill. They said that it was a ban and an infringement on free speech. But it's actually, and a lot of people have been running with the ban. Like, I've been joking about the ban. But like, the first part actually is that it's just a forced divestiture. But it's effectively a ban because the ByteDance will not be allowed by CCP, most likely to sell. So they're saying it's a ban, and then they're getting all of their users to call the congressional people. And what's funny is that you're having like 10-year-old kids that can't even vote, like tying up these phone lines and pissing off the legislative people involved. Like, this is what's happening. So like, they're getting their phone lines bombarded by 10-year-old kids. And they're just like, what is going on? So TikTok's basically showing what the legislative people are scared about, right? They're like, we don't want you involved in our political process because you're a foreknown entity. And then you're literally showing them why we're scared. So that's the setup. And then I could talk to whether or not I think it's going to go through, but let's start from there. That's the setup. That's the current situation. What do you guys think?
Jack, any thoughts, mate?
I'm not that clued up on it. The one thing I did see was the like language that will get pushed through alongside this, which will basically encroach on this long-standing debate of freedom to publish information, where if this gets signed into law, what else is in the 900-page bill that leads to website X being blasted off the face of the earth because of, you know, regime in power disagrees with what is being published there. So that's, again, why I think the straight up trade argument and like the on a per company basis, this happening rather than like unilaterally changing. I don't know. I'm not
knowledgeable
enough about politics to understand how you would write something like this into law, but along with this will come like language and suggestions that I think lead to less freedom of the exchange of information on the internet, which is not a good thing.
Right. Which China's already doing though. So I think that like to your point, that's why the trade thing is the most interesting. It's like target this country that's already like they've made it very clear. There's a firewall, right? It's like, that's it. You're not getting in information in and out of China. They're controlling the information sphere. So that's why they're targeting these four countries. But that's a good point. I totally see how they would use this to shoehorn. Like the Section 30 is a big thing they've talked about that gives these platforms protection from as being a publisher. But Bilal, I'll jump to you. Your broad thoughts about this. Because I think, I know that you've been on and off on your TikTok usage. I don't know how much you use it now.
Yeah, I still use it a little bit, but I don't really have too many other thoughts. I thought you did a really good job summarizing it. I'm more just curious here what you think is going to happen, if you think it will actually go through or how it kind of lands.
Right. Here's where it gets interesting.
What's so the Trump, betting market say?
Yeah, what does the betting market say, actually? So Trump was the first one in fall 2020, executive order tried to ban it. He 180'd and he did a Truth Social post and he said, if TikTok gets nuked, everybody's going to go to Zucker Schmucks, a platform. So he's referring to me. Called him Zucker Schmuck in all caps. And he goes, Zucker Schmuck, because he's blaming Zucker Schmuck for interfering in the election. He says he's enemy of the people.
That is hard to forget, that phrase.
But here it goes. So here it comes. It's like, why would Trump do this 180? Here's a piece of the puzzle, people. There's an individual named Jeff Yass. He runs a hedge fund out of Pennsylvania. He invested in ByteDance for 15% of the company in 2012. That I think his investment was maybe eight figures, call it $10 million. That stake is now worth $33 billion. He has a
meme coin levels there. Wow, look at that.
Billion. What's the betting market say? TikTok banned in the U.S. by
94%. No, yeah.
Damn, that's Polymarket.
Yeah, not a lot, 100, 135.
Hey, Jack, when you know those spikes, when was that? You don't have to share it again, but.
That was on January 9th. So I wonder if that was when they introduced the bill or something. That was 50%. And that was just like probably one massive bet. So it's probably just one.
There's probably not volume on that. Maybe we could try to find some of these other, maybe Manifold Markets had something, but back to the point. So Jeff Yass is a big Republican donor. So it's an interesting situation because so Nate Silver wrote a really good article about this. TikTok has no natural political protection anymore. I'll tell you why. Republicans from a trade national security front are ready to ban it. Democrats don't like misinformation. And we've talked about this. Every social network does misinformation. But if you've noticed what's been happening on TikTok, what was the big thing around 10/7 Israel-Palestine? There's this big viral moment where it looked like TikTok was pressing the button on pro-Palestinian hashtags. I don't even know if that's true, but that was a viral moment, right? So like if you're a Democrat, that's actually putting pressure. I'm not talking about the politics of that region or this war or what's been going on. I'm talking specifically, it's hurting Biden. So like you're actually politically, you have no natural protection. You guys see what I'm saying? It's like both parties are just like, let's just nuke it. And it's 50-0. That's why the bipartisan thing's so interesting. So to answer Bilal's question, will it actually happen? I mean, there's still a lot of steps. Biden has said if that bill comes to his desk, he will sign it. So the president has indicated he will sign it. But it still has to go through the House. It still has to go through the Senate. The thing to watch is how much pull does Jeff Yass have with Republicans who he's funding quite heavily. So it could be interesting. But you guys know how I feel about it. If it gets banned, if it gets banned, the reality is it's going to be forced. Here's what it comes down to. If it passes and Biden signs it, it will go to a court. It will go to Supreme Court. Maybe not Supreme Court. It will be litigated. But then you'll see the biggest piece of information you'll get from it is where CCP stands, where Xi Jinping stands. If he's like, I'm ready to nuke $200 billion of value just out of principle in this war, like ideological war I have with America, that's not a good sign for like, yeah. you know what I mean? Like that's bad. It's like if they're ready to nuke $200 billion just so America does not have control of it, here we go. What is this? Manifold.
And sorry, yeah, okay. This is the one you said, yeah? Manifold?
Yeah.
So this is saying 57%
much more volume.
Chance.
Yeah.
Yes.
57, yes.
525. Yeah, I don't use this.
This is a different, and this is a different, this is different criteria. This is this year. I think that other one was by end of May or something.
Got it.
Oh,
got
by
it.
June.
Okay,
yeah,
okay.
You're right. You're right. Because you have to have 6 months. You're right. That's good.
That makes, yeah, that's a bigger criteria.
So
exactly.
Here, I'll throw my prediction. Actually, a prediction that built on Jack's great X analysis last year. People remember when they did the name change. Trung was a little bit skeptical. Jack's like, Trung, you're missing the big picture. If it's Twitter, and he takes that public, that's Twitter. If it's X, it could be anything. I think X is positioned to swallow up TikTok. I think some deal with Larry Big Bags Ellison, good friend of Elon's, is something's on the table here. Because if you don't remember, Oracle already has a data deal with TikTok. In the fall of 2020, it was Oracle, Walmart, and Microsoft, which had the option to buy TikTok for $30 billion. Oracle is already housing and interrogating the algorithms, but it's not enough. It's just not enough. I could see some Big Bags Ellison play here with Elon, and we got TikTok ending up in X.
Oh, wow, that's
universe.
A big...
Yeah,
that's
so...
A big,
wasn't that like a Walmart and Oracle deal?
It was Walmart and Microsoft for $30 billion.
That got like canned, obviously, or whatever.
Yeah, so side note, last week, Bobby Kotick, the former CEO of Activision, which was acquired by Microsoft for $70 billion, which we've talked about, he was at the Sun Valley Conference, and per reporting, he went to Sam Altman's like, hey, do you want to buy TikTok? And for Sam Altman, that's training data for OpenAI. A lot of pieces here, people. A lot of pieces to the puzzle.
There we go. All right, that's a great breakdown. Do you guys want to talk about Dune? Trung, you had this on the
list. I haven't
done
my homework yet, boys.
I haven't watched Dune either, but if it was anything you want to chat about on that, Trung?
Yeah, I can talk about it from a, because if we do next week's deal, this is probably
let's talk about
it. I'll talk about Dune from more a filmmaker's perspective.
Yeah.
And then stuff you guys can understand. It's a going to theater perspective. Actually, blah. Didn't Melina go to Barbie and do the whole Barbieheimer thing last year?
Did she do the... I don't know if she did the Barbieheimer. She went. I think I went with her. But I don't think I think she went to Taylor Swift and did the dressing up with
that's
her
right,
friends.
That's
that
right.
was maybe the similar
The reason
thing.
I bring that up is like Dune 2 is this year's theater event.
Got it.
We can just do some family, like dad corner, life corner here. It's like, when's the last time you went to a movie? Like, blah, when's the last time you went? In the theater.
Probably like a couple months ago. Yeah, sometime this year.
What movie you want?
Oh, man. I really can't remember. It was some basic film. It wasn't that great. It was like some chick flick. You don't have to use that phrase anymore. Yeah, it was like
Mean Girls.
That's what it was. There you go.
Okay.
Wasn't the best.
Okay. So
I actually go to the movies all the time. I actually really love going.
No, this is what I mean. I want to talk about this. It's a great... Dude, we so talk
especially
about...
Especially in the bad weather day, like it's raining. You got to get out. You got to do something. You got to get
you
out.
You can't
the house.
Be on
it's
your
perfect.
Phone all day, right? Like
that's it.
This is my experience sitting down for this movie. So I went to the VIP theater with my wife, the one where they served you a booze, which is the greatest thing ever.
Oh, yeah. Is it like the comfortable seats?
Yeah,
you can
the
lay
comfy
back
chairs.
A bit? Do they bring you wings? Can you order
they bring
food?
They bring you food if you want.
That's the move, and like, man.
But the problem is a 2-hour and 45-minute movie. So I'm kneeling. I'm throwing back White Claws. Poor. Throwing black White Claws. But just awful judgment, right? Awful judgment in the sense of...
No reason. Bro, absolutely no reason to be getting smashed just in like, the, in
and
the
you gotta,
cinema.
And you got a hose. So... This movie, you know you're going to hose if you're throwing by
you
White Claw.
You can't pause it like Netflix, you know?
But I just found out something. There's an app called RunPee. You guys heard of this?
Oh, that's hilarious.
Somebody created an app called RunPee. And it's called the RunPee app. And they go through every movie and they tell you which part of the movie where there's no plot advancement where you can just go run and take
so
a piss.
Oh, so good. Wow. I can't believe someone made that.
I cannot believe it. I found out about it after the film. So anyways, I bring all this up because... I'll tell you that I'll give you guys some interesting things about Dune too. So last year's movie, the kind of the experience movie, Oppenheimer. You saw it in theaters, right? Jack, did you watch Oppenheimer in theater?
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet.
You still haven't seen it? Okay. Well, Jack, I want to talk to you. You got three kids, man. How far is the idea of a film? And like, it's just not even on your radar.
We did, you know, it's funny. We got a babysitter a couple of weeks ago and went and watched The Beekeeper. Did you see that? It was Jason Statham.
Beekeeper. Oh!
Just is like hilariously violent, like, you know, stupid, easy watch action movie.
Well, you have to tell me, why did you choose to go to watch The Beekeeper? This is interesting, right? It's like Parent Corner. Why did you choose to go to watch it?
For that reason. Like, because it's not Oppenheimer. It's not about like, yeah, we just want to light.
You wanted to zone
entertaining
out.
Light, couple hours.
Entertaining violent film.
Yeah.
You know what's so funny though?
Raisinettes.
Well, you had the raisinettes. Did you have dinner afterwards?
No, mate. No.
You just went to the theater and you called it.
Went to bed, yeah.
Dude, the funny thing about theaters is like, if you do the full dinner movie, that's
went
a seven.
Went to bed, yeah. Sorry, he just seems so like, yep, that was it.
That was it.
The dad
no,
corner
but that's
vibe.
What, that's yeah. What's so funny though. It's like a 7-hour commitment if you do dinner in a movie, right? It's like 30 that's minutes each way. It's like a 2.5-hour movie and then you have to, it's
I mean,
actually
just
a massive
say, like, I have no self-control. That's the one environment where I just like, I'm eating just absurd.
Okay, what'd you get? You got Raisinettes.
Popcorn, DC. Raisinettes. Popcorn. What else we get? There's a Publix here that does, there's a little English section, blah. It's got Maltesers.
Oh, there we go.
Milky Beautiful. Bar buttons.
Dude, wow, Maltesers?
Okay. Pastels.
Do they have Maltesers in Canada, Trung?
Yes, they're delicious.
They are good, yeah.
Notice
so you just you'd bring all of those in with you.
Oh yeah,
you sneak them in.
Got the bag. Yeah.
That's the. Yeah,
oh,
you gotta
oh,
give
you
it
don't,
to lady. They don't.
Say you
the,
ain't
no,
lying.
You go to the cat. I get the raisinettes. I get the popcorn. Okay. Get
and then
the
you bring your
drink,
own stuff too.
And you have a couple little accoutrements.
You gotta bring the wings. You know that my back in the day, my boy Kaz, he would always bring multiple wings, just in a little. He would just he'd be in there. Eight wings, just like
oh, mate,
it.
Respect. The ridiculous. Sick, filthy, the hot it, food in a cinema is shouldn't be allowed.
Oh, yeah, that's ridiculous.
Wait, Jack,
yeah.
I love that you threw them a little bit of margin. Jack felt bad. Yeah, I'll throw in the 90%
yeah,
margin of the popcorn.
Yeah, exactly.
Speaking
I'll buy
of
the
popcorn,
$12 Raisinets yeah. or whatever.
Speaking exactly. of popcorn, I don't know if you guys saw the meme for Dune 2 was that they made there's a sandworm character and they made a popcorn bucket. I don't know if you guys saw it. It looks like a fleshlight, okay? That's a joke.
Nice.
So, but here's our boy Ramp Capital had this, oh my God. Read this tweet out for the listeners. It goes, it's a video of Brad Pitt from Seven Deadly Sins.
I saw this and I didn't get it at first. Now I get it.
Yeah, the joke with the bucket God. Is that, so somebody put a photo of the bucket up 2 weeks ago. And then the joke was, the guy tweets it and he goes, yeah, I'll have the Dune popcorn bucket. 7 pumps of butter hold the popcorn.
Incredible.
And then Ramp takes it, and it's the photo of Brad Pitt realizing that fucking his wife said he got chopped off. He's just like, oh no, this one's unreal. But somebody did a good riff on that ad because we're doing memes. He goes, he stole Ramp's tweet and goes, yeah, I'll get the Dune popcorn bucket. 7 pumps of butter hold the popcorn. And then he goes, but I'm going to watch Madam Web, which was starring Sydney Sweeney.
Oh, my God. Incredible.
Okay,
swimming
so
in
the
context.
Yeah, there you
Here
go.
We go.
It's all punchline. So the last thing I'll say about Dune, I'd say watch it for sure. But I love Denis Villeneuve, okay? French-Canadian. Do you guys know what film he's directed in the past? You guys have seen it. Have
his
you
name again?
Seen Denis Villeneuve?
Okay.
He's a new Christopher Nolan, or he's like, well, the thing is he's a bit older than Christopher Nolan, but he's on that run. He did Sicario. Have you seen Sicario?
It's a good flick, man. It's a good
Good
it's a classic,
is
yeah.
Benicio del Toro in Sicario?
Great, man.
The scene at the border when they got, dude, the car. Okay, anyways, I'm getting a little ahead of myself. So he did 2010 Prisoners, 2014 Sicario, 2016 Arrival. How good of a sci-fi flick was Arrival with Amy Adams?
I've seen it.
Okay, put that on the list. He did Blade Runner 2049. And then here we go. This is a very NIA story, a bet on yourself story. You guys are going to love this. 2017, Warner Brother comes up. It's like, we're redoing Dune. Dune, famously, is the best-selling sci-fi book ever. Written by, in 1965, by Frank Herbert. Okay? Very difficult to adapt. This is a very complex intergalactic plot, a lot of political machinations. You got to build these worlds up and like deliver these multiple storylines. Very complex.
You read that book, by the way.
I've never read it.
Okay,
so
me too, but
here's the funny thing. Best-selling sci-fi book ever. Never got into it. Knew nothing about this story beforehand, which is a little bit shocking because I'm kind of into this world. But 1984, David Lynch, famous director, made a version of Dune, flopped. 2000, a TV series, Dune. Flopped. That one actually was a little bit more popular. So they go to Denis Villeneuve. Here's a bet on yourself. He's coming off this heater run I just said. He just did Prisoner, Sicario. Sicario so fucking good. Arrival and Blade Runner. And they go, hey. And remember, this is theaters in 2017. Big budgets, still kind of going. But Warner Brothers like, we're going to let you do one movie. Villeneuve wants to do a trilogy. They're like, we're not going to give you money for a trilogy. You can do one movie. You get 2.5 hours max. He takes the biggest risk, creative risk. He goes, I'm just going to film this first movie as if you guys have greenlit the trilogy. And they're like, well, we're not giving you the trilogy. Yeah. He goes, I'm just going to do it. He does it. He gets Timothée Chalamet, good looking cat. Zendaya, on the run up. Josh Brolin. Legend from Sicario.
It's for Dune 1, right? The first one.
Yeah, Dune 1.
Yeah.
The film came out in 2021. Javier Bardem. So here's the setup. He puts all his eggs in to do it his creative way. But if he doesn't get the green light for the sequel, he looks like an asshat. Because this movie is all set up and it ends on the last line in Dune 1 is this is just the beginning.
Spoiler alert. There we go.
So I'm just telling you, it's not really a spoiler alert. It's just like,
okay.
That movie as a standalone.
Yeah.
Would be the dumbest thing ever.
Yeah, that's
so the movie
annoying,
comes out. You know what I'm saying? So he takes a huge risk. 2021, the movie comes out during COVID. Bro.
It was all on HBO or whatever, right?
I think when Warner, it came out. Warner Brothers, controversially, and this is why Christopher Nolan left Warner, because they were doing streaming and theater same day. And Villeneuve has to crush it at the box office. If he doesn't crush it, he's not getting the sequel. It does just good enough at the box office this first week. They greenlight the sequel. It makes $440 million, which isn't that much for this type of movie. But the second one, you guys have seen the memes, right? Like you saw the hype around. People are hyped up for this. So this movie, they will get a trilogy out of it. So I'm saying great job. And I'm just saying, for anyone that hasn't seen it yet, you get the benefit of knowing you have 5.5 hours of Dune. And it's worth it to go watch. So that's my rant about Dune. Last thing I'll add to tie off what Bilal mentioned, which is the perfect point. Christopher Nolan was really mad at Warner Brothers about doing the day and date where they released streaming and a theater at the same day. Because he's a Pierce, right? He's like, I want my film in theater for at least 8 weeks. So he took Oppenheimer to Universal. And what just happened with Oppenheimer? It won Best Picture. So like, that's what the world we're in. So let me tie all that in. That's my rant about films in the Hollywood.
Amazing.
There we go.
Killing it. Jack, have you seen either of these yet?
No, I want to.
I
feel like during the first one I was trying to start it several times and just never got it going fully. And it was,
but now you know there's
four more
hours
watch it.
Waiting
yeah.
for you.
100%.
Celia is not a big sci-fi enjoyer.
Same,
so
yeah,
it's
yeah.
But let me
got
throw
a fine
Celia.
Time on your
I'm
own.
Waiting
I know
for a plane ride
listening.
Or something, I'll get
exactly,
it get
yeah,
it down
yeah.
me.
I know Celia's listening, so let me pitch you, Celia. This is my wife's take on Dune.
Nice.
Timothée Chalamet, good looking cat. He's a new Leo. He's a new Leonardo DiCaprio. If you want that energy. Right. Yeah. If you want that square jaw, dude's got the squarest jaw in the world. Yeah, looking clean.
There we go.
But no one will ever be Leo in 1997, though. Imagine that. 23 years old. You're the star of the highest grossing film ever. That's Leo. Like, you have to remember how big Leo was before the internet fractured attention.
Where's Timothy Chalamet from? Is he also... He's straight French, or he's Canadian French.
And
or something.
He may or may not be dating one Kylie.
American Jordan. French, right? That's what
American French. Oh,
okay. American French. All right. Cool, cool, cool.
Him and Denis Villeneuve, French Canadian, were speaking French on set. So there you go.
Born in New York City.
Why don't we do this? Why don't we keep the. Are these AMA questions relevant next week, Bilal? Or
They aren't too many, so we could probably do a couple if you guys wanted, or we can save them. How you guys doing for time, Jack?
I want to ask Bilal what he thinks some of these are worthy of are evergreen enough. Why don't you hit the ones that aren't evergreen?
I think, yeah, I don't know if they fully are. Maybe we just do. Are you guys all right for time, or how are you doing?
Yeah, if we could squeeze off one or two non-evergreen ones.
I could do five minutes.
Let's do 5 minutes. There were a couple themes. So yeah, great breakdown, Trunk. Thanks for sharing that. The first question from Lando was when Lambo. Obviously got to respect the ask there. Any thoughts on that, Jack Butcher?
When Lambo, I mean,
you're probably the closest to a Lambo right now.
Intelligently allocated a year ago, you should be driving one now.
Should it be? Yeah.
Wait, Jack, a year ago, if you were intelligently allocated 2 weeks ago,
there you go. I mean, I don't know about intelligently, though. That's the key word.
That's the strong word. All right.
Okay, that was a good one.
All jokes aside, there are a couple little crypto-y questions in there, which I think we're fine to share.
Let's bang them up.
Chance asked a question. VM asked a similar question, so I'll kind of combine them. Chance asked, what are your biggest regrets of the last cycle? And what will you do differently this time? And similarly, VM said, what's your profit taking strategy? Even if something is long term, is there a profit taking strategy?
Oh, these are good.
Or no?
So let me answer. I'm going to answer this. Biggest regret? Here's my biggest regret.
Where do we start, Trunk?
was not building more position when BTC was under 20K. Because I believed the thesis. It never changed, right? So like, but I the paper hand mentality. I'm like, oh, I can't do 20. That's below like what I should have bought at 20 because we famously people that watch this, I bought at 30 and nothing ever changed, right? Like I said, just didn't look at my portfolio. Now, profit taking. Who asked about profit taking?
VM.
VM.
Let me answer your question, VM, about profit taking. Would you profit take a piece of Fifth Avenue to buy a coffee? Yeah. Let me put it to you like that. Profit exit plan. Bitcoin is the exit plan. There is no exit plan.
There you go. There is no exit plan. No,
so
great,
I'll hand it up to you guys.
But yeah, no. I'll answer very quickly before Jack might have more of a serious one. I think my biggest regret is not understanding what the hell Jack was talking about when he's talking about some of these things originally. And me and you are sitting there like dodos, basically being like,
you guys should check out Geo Bode. I'm like, what the fuck?
The Bode Ape, obviously. The all jokes aside, my one really quickly, two things. One is, they're kind of related. The first is, I would separate again, obviously no investment advice, but Bitcoin, Ethereum, I kind of see as these staple things. I'm happy I've held them for 7-8 years and probably will hold for a long time. But all the other stuff, all the frothy stuff, I'd probably put Solana in that bucket right now for me personally, just because I'm kind of holding that long-term-ish. But all the other stuff, all the stuff we were messing around with, NFTs, all that stuff, I should have been way more ruthless with having set times to take some profit, which comes back to that. So the way I have it now is I'm not being as greedy this time around. I'm still messing around with some of the meme coin stuff as well. Just obviously we're not dropping names because we don't want to mess people up. But like last night I dropped something. This morning I looked at it. It was 3x up. I'm like, I don't need to be 30 up like I've done in the past.
Big Daddy Bilal.
There we go. On a small bag. But you know, you gotta take a few and you gotta say, okay, this is for fun. This is the fun bucket. And there's that, you know, I know we've talked about Rao Powell on the pod and he's maybe controversial in some ways because he had this big ETH kind of target. But I think one of the things he's been talking a lot about is like, don't fuck it up, essentially. Like this is, you know, it's all right to be messing around with stuff. If you're doing some meme coin stuff, you mess around with NFTs or whatever, just like, don't be stupid about it. And I think this time around, I've got a lot more, I'm okay with cutting it. If I'm up a certain amount and it's not something I'm really trying to hold long-term, I'm okay with the FOMO of, oh, that went to the moon and I wasn't involved. And then the second thing is I've pretty much never really sold any of my Bitcoin ETH since the beginning. And that was my plan. It was five to seven years. I said, let me wait. And this time around, I will have to be a bit more strategic about it, because I think last time one of my regrets was I probably should have taken some off the table on the run up. But I think like people like Jack, you know, you bought a house, right? And that was a forced reason where you're like, oh, I need to free up some cash. My other friend who listened to the pod did something very similar. Whereas I didn't have anything like that. And I was like, I'm going to stick to my long-term plan, which you can argue is still kind of working in a way. But maybe I think the way I'm looking at it now is a percentage of my overall portfolio. If it goes above a certain amount, I need to kind of rebalance, which is the traditional CFA fan. You know, you would have learned about that, Trung, right? Like anything above a certain percentage, you need to bring it back
down. Yeah, because you want your portfolio 90% serious, 10% silly.
That's
if you're like, if Bilal had this thing go 50x, his silly is now half his portfolio, and that's just silly.
That is too silly. Yeah, and I can't be messing around with that anymore. It's getting serious. So yeah, that was my kind of short answer, but but Jack, what about you, mate?
Similar, I think. Yeah, the Bitcoin and ETH long term hold. But like another thing for me is like tax stuff, having this being like a part of earning your income in crypto, is like it actually forces you to look at it very differently than just buying and leaving it, because you have to obviously convert to
pay your taxes,
USD to pay tax. So like I have like that amount plus a comfort amount on top of that that just goes out into maintenance expenses. And like I would imagine all of us have, by traditional standards, idiotic amount of allocation to this stuff. So like
yeah,
it's all about, as you were saying before, it's like the position you're in should dictate your risk tolerance. And that's like, my risk tolerance this time around is different than my risk tolerance last time around, because you're like trying to catapult yourself into a different situation, yeah, as opposed to like not lose your ass when you're already in a situation that you are comfortable in. So yeah, like if I was 18 doing this stuff, living with my mom and dad, you better believe I'd be putting every cent.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Into it.
You
better believe I'd be putting size into these positions.
Right. Relative to my net worth. And this is in hindsight, right? Which is always 2020, is there was moments where I looked at my portfolio in 2021 and what should have gone through my head is like, this is like X amount of runway where you'd never have to worry about whatever, you know, if you can have that in a currency that your landlord accepts, that's probably a decent.
Jack, that's a great way to put it, Jack.
Are you taking some of your Fifth Ave property and paying rent with it?
Exactly. Yeah. Well, that's another interesting thing is like those narratives are kind of, those narratives being in place when this stuff is like roaring is like the most dangerous stuff too, right? It's like,
yeah, when,
and this is not me giving any prediction on the movement of this stuff, but to your point, the thing that I'm most proud of all of this time is having the standing Coinbase order from 20, whenever it was, just like a relatively tiny amount of money every week. It's just like ticking into this long-term, you know,
well, of course, I'm
your kids. Like thinking about it completely different as a place to store your energy. Let's go down the sailor rabbit hole. Like a long-term protection against the money that you're going to spend in your checking account or whatever else. And then all of the stuff you play around with, I saw someone say that is like, you should aim to make whatever the majority of capital you are hoping to make off of this like rush of interest And then the Bitcoin and Ethereum stuff should be just there in the background ticking away for however long you want to, you're comfortable with holding it. But if, like people say, if you make life changing money, change your life. Like that's really,
that's a great way.
The best advice ever, because things like putting a deposit on a house or paying for something that your family needs, like
paying down debt, a lot of people.
Yeah, legitimately, you are in a completely different situation after that. And like to look at when you, like your biggest regret is being in a situation where you could have done that and not doing it. And I've been in that situation a couple times. And you look just like, I'm such an idiot, you know, like because all of the things that you're imagining beyond that, you have no concrete idea of what they really are anyway, you know, like if you have some concrete, to your point, Bilal, it's like you have some
licks target, to bricks, like, man.
X months or X years of living expenses or this deposit. And like it could be variable. But I would also encourage like writing that down too. And this is all.
That's a great point.
And this is all like
say that too,
the advice that we should be given here is like, none of this should be like the ultimate dependence, right? This is gravy, this situation. It's like value creation in some other area that allows you to store your money or that. That's actually the first conversation we ever had, Bilal. I don't know if you remember that. Was like, if you have $100 in your checking account, there are stories that you'll find on Twitter where people have taken that and run it up to $100,000 or whatever, and good on them. I'm not discouraging that whatsoever. It's a very, very rare result though, right? The thing that's important in that situation is where the next $100 is coming from outside of that ecosystem versus every trade being a life deciding outcome. And man, all of this stuff is like so situation dependent, where if you have a house and kids as I do, your risk profile is likely different than somebody who does not have that and has maybe, you know, W-2 job. I actually like had a bad model for that back when I did have a proper job, where I was like, you're in actually a really interesting position to take advantage of this stuff if you're in that situation, right? Where you have, if you can be disciplined about how you allocate stuff, you know what's coming every 2 weeks. Again, like I would get quite uncomfortable giving advice about all this stuff because it's like anything specific. And this is actually something I haven't said on the pod before, is people like go quiet about this after a certain period of time because they're just like, I don't want to see anyone get hosed. You know, like even this thing that I have conviction in, or I think is interesting, like the Bored Ape thing from the last time around, those were like $400, right? So you're like, oh, this is kind of interesting. You know, it's not an obscene amount of money relative to my situation. So I'm comfortable talking about it, blah, blah, blah. But yeah.
But this is why we're not dropping meme coin names, right? This is the exact reason. It's like, this is why we're not talking, like, we're talking about, like, Bilal's like, yay. Yeah, 3x as a joke, like on a small amount of money, but I'm not going to give you the name of this because you don't want people. We're kind of FOMOing, we're not really, right? We're not doing anything irresponsible. For the love of God, it's called not investment advice.
Well, what I'm trying to say is like the incentives are so distorted at different times, right? Where that's what, like the Sailor conviction pitch is so fascinating for so many reasons, because it's played out, like because you believe it before the rest of the world believes it, and it's sharp enough where like crossing all those Rubicons, the corporate treasury, the ETF, all of those things, like what we're really talking about is like what gets dragged up behind the legitimacy that created. And a huge majority of that is going to be only relevant for 6 months, 9 months, a week, a day, whatever else. And like understanding that that's the world you're playing in relative to like, oh, some of the biggest wealth managers in the world now have a fiduciary responsibility to protect the value of this asset is a whole different game. And almost separating those two things into different worlds is the mental model that should be used too, right? Like the Bitcoin maxi, doctrine is Bitcoin, not crypto. Now that's like don't talk about crypto, talk about Bitcoin, separate the two. They're two different ecosystems entirely. And I think like there's some truth to that from a like cultural perspective, but now there's truth to it from like where they sit in the financial ecosystem more broadly. Like one has been institutionally accepted and everything else benefits from that, but it's far more Wild West territory relative to the stuff that BlackRock and Michael Saylor and, you know, the hosts of CNBC have a ticker flicking across the bottom. But again, it's moving quick. They're talking about dog with hat on CNBC now too. So there is a, an argument to be made.
I mean, what responsibility, I mean, this is the whole point, right? And this is when people, like the Cramer effect. Cramer is out there making 10 stock recos a week, right?
Right. I find that kind of insane.
Like,
yeah.
It's insane, dude. It's insane. CNBC's entire like business model amongst retail is insane. They know it's insane. This
and
is
you
why
pay,
they
and there's
bring
a like
the
subscription
teller.
Product too, right?
Exactly.
They charge
CNBC
people
Pro.
Like
this
if you look at the
not
language
on
that,
back.
It's absolutely mental what they say.
They're afraid to bring Trung Fan back on the podcast,
truth
on the show.
Baby.
They don't want me telling the truth about what's going on at CNBC.
Yeah, look at this. Your next best investment starts here, CNBC
That's
Pro.
That's wild, right? That's
gain an investing advantage with exclusive advice. Access to benefits like CNBC's industry-leading expert research and analysis.
Insane. Yeah, that's insane. Wild. Insane.
Jack, I do want to actually reiterate one of the things you said before, which is just an honest thing. Like I mentioned the 3X from last night. To keep the story honest, a day before, I lost 50% and I made a 30%, right? So those were three little mini.
Listen,
I'm just being honest, right?
Yeah, yeah.
The reason I'm saying that is because, yeah, because people share the screenshot of $100 to $100,000, and that is literally a lottery ticket. Like most people are not doing that. And
they don't
and
show
creates,
how they lost 300K finding that coin.
100%. And again, I'm being honest again, from the last run up, I looked at the five or six things that I, you know, invested in for silly amounts, but to be honest, they were actually significant. There was a significant amount of money. Like right now I'm doing way less based on, you know, just like messing around. Most of those went to 99% losses, like literally, right? like remember all the wild Safe Moon, like all that crazy we talked about in the pod,
like they the USD below.
yeah exactly, like the USD. But so that's one thing. And the second thing I want to mention is just to give something tangible, because I have actually been, you know, thinking about like, you know, how to define this for myself. And so I won't actually say a percentage or anything like that, because that's for people to decide. But the important thing is before the full-on euphoria, because we're getting there, let's be honest. We already feel, me and Jack get on the pod, we're like, oh, we got a haircut. It's that bull market haircut. We're like, oh, we're feeling
Jack,
fresh right now.
Jack
you know?
Flew to Dubai to get the $1,000 haircut.
Exactly. But what I'll say is when it really hits, you're not going to want to sell, right? Like, and that's the truth. That's what happens each time.
Man, we should. I promise I'll curate some for next week, like some of the tweets around that, where it's like the top... Well, I think I sent it to you boys. It's like all that stuff is curated in hindsight, right? It's like
exactly
any situation where people are like, oh, it's feeling a bit frothy. Oh, it's top signal, blah, blah. It's like you have no even conception of selling when it's the perfect time to sell. That's
and
the
that's
reason
normally,
the price is so insane.
Exactly. And we're seeing little patterns right now, like the Drake posting, like there are some signals. But when you really get in that euphoric state, you're using that to make more of a case to buy more and do all that. It's that meme, you know, like when it hits 69 on the way up, you're like, oh my God, I should have bought more. And then when it goes to 20 on the way down, you're like, oh my God, the world's ending, and on the way back up. So it's literally, you're not going to be able to time this and your emotions are going to get the better of you. So it is really important to write it down. And so
I have a plan.
I'm looking at my version of this right now, and I have written out a percentage, two or three different things. One is a total percentage of my portfolio. So that's my overall net worth, all the stocks, my 401k, everything, all that amount. And what is a reasonable amount percentage wise for me to feel comfortable as a crypto bucket? And that for me is mainly like Bitcoin, Ethereum, Solana, right? That and it really the first two. That is for someone else to decide. Like back in the day, you'd say 1% to 2% for gold, and some people go 5%, 10%. Like mine's been way higher, obviously, right? So I'm not going to give an actual number there. People can decide that. That second way is looking at a target return, like I bought this for $100 and now I'm at 300. Great, that's a 3X. I'm happy to cash in. So again, all of these are for you to decide yourself, but that's kind of how I've written it out for myself, because I know for sure when it hits 100,000, I'm not going to want to sell Bitcoin, right? I'm going to be like, oh, this is going to $1 million. Saylor was right. And you're in that state. So you need to know you're not going to get a perfect timing in and have that written out. And ideally you have it automatically set up, so it's ready to sell. Like you have the sell orders already done, which I haven't done that myself, but I should do. So yeah, that's just my honest take on that. Anything else, no, Trunk, CFA no, I fan
think,
here?
I think you answered that AMA like very astutely.
There we go. All right. I guess the last question, this one, we will try doing some more of the other ones next time. Trunk, this was from a few weeks ago, so this is specifically for you from Elena. She asked on a YouTube comment, where was it? Here we go. How does Trunk, or just say for maybe Jack as well, how do you explain your job to your kid?
You know what? Let's hold on to that, because I actually have like a multi
really good story. All right. Maybe we'll start off with it next week.
We'll tease the listeners. We'll have that teed up for next week.
All right, perfect. All right, let's call it here then. Yeah, boys, we'll save some of those questions for next time. Jack, you look like you have a thought there. What's going on?
No, it's just going to be a rambling thing, but the like allocation thing is so difficult because you have
gone. Yeah,
I was just going to say, like, maybe if you've been listening to this podcast long enough, you might be remotely in this camp, whereas like you have some philosophical level of belief in something, and then you have like responsibilities that exist outside of yourself and to your family and to, you know, and like trying to switch between those two mental modes is very hard to do.
Definitely.
And even the thing that got you to believe in this thing in the first place, this is getting to Saylor territory, right? Where you're like, why would I ever sell this? This is like the new solution for storing money and transporting wealth and blah. And you can believe those things, but the market is so brutal that if you're not saying that from your $100 million Miami Beach oceanfront property, you're in a little bit of a different situation.
But I'm saying Saylor.
Balancing those two ideas. And even if you do believe that philosophically, your allocation doesn't need to be 100%. For you to benefit from that, right?
That's a great point. Yeah,
because if the prophecy is correct in the end, then your your sensible allocation is still gonna
well. Make a difference.
Yes, well, let me pin that with in Dune. One of the memes you guys might have seen online was Javier Bardem's character. He's part of this tribe called the Freemen. He just says Lizan al Greb, and that means Messiah. Like, the people should be hitting that on the Michael Saylor like predictions, right? Goodness, not investment advice.
Definitely not. And actually, the last 20-second addendum I'm going to say to Jack's point, I felt that last time around where very much so I was in these
paradigm
two,
shift.
And you're like, okay, I really truly do think this is going to be around, but a lot of this is time frame as well. Like, am I going to need to buy a house? Am I going to need to pay for healthcare? Am I going to have to, you know, all the different things you have in your life. And at that moment, I was able to say, I'm actually going okay for a few years because I'm still earning money. I'm okay to let things run up. But this time around, I'm in a different position, to be honest. Like, you guys know a little bit. I'm just in my own phase of my life where I actually need to be a bit more responsible with that sort of stuff. And I do think we're at the stage now where last time I was waking up thinking about the price, which is really sad to say, but like, I'm being honest, that because it got to a stage where I'm like,
I don't think anybody on this call was not in that situation.
Yeah, exactly. So it sounds sad, right?
But like, 2022 was bad, man.
Yeah. And then also, and that feeling of a drop, like, just know this, if this is the first big run up, you might have grown from a little bit to a lot a bit. And when it starts dropping, like,
which,
you know,
it will.
20-30% drop on $1,000 is doable. When we're talking, you know, significant amount of money, that is, you know, might be an amount that you're earning in a month or earning in a year. And you're like, that is going to hurt you. And you need to be able to take that. And if you can't mentally take that and you're waking up being like shook or like worried about stuff, like, that is a great signal for yourself to say, this is, I'm taking it to
it's
a buy.
It's the Morgan Housel line. One of the best lines from Psychology of Money is like, invest as much where you can sleep at night.
That's the perfect. Bilal's
get to that point, right?
Yeah. Exactly. Bilal that's always a good rule in general. Yeah. So you want to go to sleep at night. All right, boys, that was a great chat. Thanks for everyone for posting the questions. We've saved them for the next time we do that stuff. And I really appreciate all the support. We hope you're having as much fun as we are, because it's definitely been a really fun few weeks. And to add to all of this dopamine, boys, Arsenal have won 8 games in a row, top of the Premier League.
Oh, that's why
they're playing today, aren't they, Bilal?
Playing Champions League in a little bit. Yeah, and it's been March and April might be a little tougher, but it's like the two irrational things of my life coming together right now.
That's why you got a haircut.
Oh, yeah, you got to be fresh for that. Yeah, exactly.
Chelsea and Man City are coming.
Exactly. Wow. 1 point between the top three. This is the wildest Premier League run. 10 games to go. Anyone who's a Premier League fan knows what's going on. It's been a wild, wild time. Anyway, thanks for being here. We appreciate you guys, and we'll see you next week. Cheers. Peace. Bye-bye.